14. Anabasis. At my lord's instruction, I explained to the four of them the corruption and suspension of time, and how this, inadvertently, might actually favor us. Then I tell them his scheme of attack. Its code name, quite utilitarian, is Anabasis. Our defenders hold the sealed walls of the final fortress, while outside the last of our warrior armies fight a hopeless rearguard to delay and thwart the enemy advance. Neither will last long, but while they do, we must strike. A boarding action by teleport assault, so only the most formidably armored will be capable of withstanding the transition. It will be a spear-tip thrust against the primary, just the way my lord taught his first found. Taught him so well, indeed, that he owns the tactic as his signature.
"He will expect it,"
says Dorn, unable to stop being a strategist. "Well, we can let him, Rogel," I reply. "Let him expect exactly what is coming. Expecting something and stopping it are different things entirely."
"But to walk into a trap,"
he insists. "Oh, let us hope it is a trap," I tell him. "For though time has run out, we have no time left to spare. If it is an error, a mistake, or a malfunction, those things could be remedied at any moment. If the shields are relit, this chance is lost. The urgency with which we must act is self-evident." Then I tell them that our lord will lead the assault himself. That is why he rises. The four of them will stay here and hold the palace through the final hours. They all immediately turn to look at the golden throne, just as I expected. Each one of them wants to protest. My lord dims the radiance of his aspect a little, so they can read the solemn sincerity on his face and not burn out their eyes. His glance alone has quietened kings and stilled the objections of Caesars. It permits no defiance. And they are loyal, all of them. All of his children were made to be loyal, but the grotesque heat of this war has fully proofed these four. The fidelity of Valdor and these last three sons is irreproachable. I am startled, therefore, when Sanguinius says simply,
"No."
Sanguinius, of all of them. Even Valdor looks at him askance, and the Captain General was the only one I truly thought might utter an objection. I ask the Great Angel what he means by his protestation. He does not look at me. His gaze remains fixed upon the throne. There is a shining quality in his eyes. It's not defiance, it's some kind of certainty. Before he can answer, Rogel speaks too.
"We will not let you go alone, Liege Father. Not into this."
"Oh, now Rogel!" I study him, too. The Praetorian dares not speak another word of opposition, but the white heat of his thoughts is clear enough. This siege, they sear, and all the work I have done to hold it has never been about the palace. I have defended the palace because you are in it, and if you go to the vengeful spirit, then my siege defence moves with you. It is as simple as that.
"My king,"
says Constantine,
"what you have commanded is out of the question. The Legio Custodes are your life wards. They are the only ones fit for this undertaking. They must go with you, and where they go, I go."
Vulcan does not speak, but he does not have to. His frown expresses his reservations quite plainly. Well, well, I am dismayed. All of them. I know full well my lord will be infuriated by their reaction to a simple order, yet also touched by their determination to defend him. Except, is this response born of high virtue and love, or of something darker? Sanguinius is the paragon of integrity, yet he was the first to refuse. Of them all, Valdor was ever the most unswerving. Now he disobeys. Has, as I feared, his deepening exposure to the secrets of chaos gnawed a discontent in his heart? Is this a sign that the rot of disloyalty has reached even the heart of fidelity? This war has split brother from brother and father from son against the rule of nature. At this final hour, do these last sons turn against their master's will? I look to the throne. I ignore the painful dazzle of the light in my eyes. I remain calm, for no counsel was ever valued that came from fervent lips. Think, I say to him and him alone. They've given everything for you, as I'll give everything. So you must in turn give back. Share now, be it in victory or defeat. You always told me, always, that we were together in this. The whole of mankind as one thing, striving as one. So, think, my king of ages. There must be understanding here. For too long, as is your habit, you've seemed silent and remote, hiding your schemes from all. I know. You have been most wretchedly preoccupied. Well, my old friend, they've learned to think and decide for themselves. They've had to. And isn't that how you made them? The trait you fostered in them? Don't be the stern patriarch now and rebuke them for the very virtue you raised them to uphold. He knows I'm right, of course. I'm correct because, in so many ways, I have been his conscience down the years. He has made mistakes. That's only human. There are things he regrets, for he has told me so. The greatest of those is that he has kept others out. He was too long alone, I fear. Too many centuries working in solitude. There were sometimes friends and allies, but one by one they left him, or reached the ends of their natural lifespans. He made Constantine and the Primarchs as sons and first companions, but their arrival still seems recent to him. He has not grown accustomed to trusting them the way that he should, or sharing with them the scope of his intentions. Well, no more mistakes, old friend. Do not act the tyrant and bark orders. You must compromise and show them a sign that the trust they have in you is reciprocated. All four, it cannot be denied, are needed on the ground. The conflict has reached its fiercest pitch, and to remove all four champions from the field is to remove all the figureheads and symbols that cleave our forces together. But neither Rogel nor Constantine will permit my lord to venture alone without their forces as close protection. Indeed, both thought the hour of our lord's enforced evacuation was approaching. Vulcan has fought in solitary for too long, and yearns to wage war alongside his brothers. And Sanguinius has the honour of his legion to uphold. Debate now would be fruitless. I sense my master quell his anger. Good. We are together in this, and we will end it together, not just through the united strength of our company, but because you need them to see it done. They need to witness the culmination of this war and the end of this horror, and share in the achievement, just as afterwards they must share in the plan. For them to fully invest their hearts in the future, they must be stakeholders in the present. Understand your oversights. You have withheld too much for too long, veiling your great work from all eyes. They are your sons, and their part in this must be respected. And further, this is owed them. They have needs of their own to fulfil. Honour, justice, catharsis, retribution. They have borne all of this, and show the wounds of it. And those wounds must be assuaged. Each one, in his own way, is also a vengeful spirit. But there must be accommodation. Just as my master cannot be everywhere and do all things, neither can they. His mind turns to me and makes his resolution known. Once again, I become his voice. Constantine. Rogel, I say, my tone as thin as paper. You will select your best warriors, accompany each. I warn you not to denude our embattled forces on the walls. Our last fastness must hold while you are absent. Rogel, I know you have already made your pick, anticipating this moment days ago. Constantine, choose which sentinels you require. I turn to Vulcan. I lean heavily on my staff, for standing has become a Herculean task. Vulcan, I say gently, you deserve to go, but you will not, for I need you. I'm sorry. Your father is about to ask me to ward the Golden Throne in his place. It is not a task I welcome, but I'll do it without demur. I need you here at my side. You know sadly too well the reason why. He pauses. In the long moment that follows, I see Vulcan's jaw clench. I know he feels robbed of honour in this, but the reasoning is irrefutable. Vulcan has no gift whatsoever for the operation of the throne, no ethereal magic, which is why Vulcan, and only Vulcan, must stay to take my place if I fail. For if I fail, then all is truly lost, and Vulcan must take the throne and prevent Horus from obtaining all the riches, secrets, treasures, and mysteries of the palace. Forever. Vulcan knows this to be true. Finally and simply, he nods. Sanguinius, I say. You will select a company of blood angels to join Anabasis. But we stand in the final fortress at the final hour, my boy. The last of our forces are fighting and dying as we speak, to preserve this last piece of earth. They need a commander. More, they need a figurehead, a warrior they can rally to, and who will keep their courage alive to the very last. You're the brightest one. You are, and always have been, the embodiment of glory, the shining symbol of all that we cherish. A Blood Angel's company will have the honour of joining the vengeful spirit assault. I suggest Raldoron best suited to command it, but you must stay here and be our figurehead. In this you will be named the Emperor's true War Master, and drive back the hosts of the one who so villainously defames that title. I nod towards my lord. His word is stated. I ask them if they understand what I have told them. Rogel, Constantine, and Vulcan reply that they do. Sanguinius says nothing.